Hi everyone, my name's Steve Tudor and welcome to the Real Madrid Preview Pod, a pod that would dearly love to copy and paste last season's performance and result into Wednesday night and then we'll be alright. Los Blancos are unbeaten in 12. They have Jude Bellingham and Carlo Ancelotti in the dugout. They have a pedigree of being European champions 14 times over. City, meanwhile, are unbeaten in 27. We have Kevin De Bruyne and Pep Guardiola in the dugout and we are the European champions. It's time to put on our big boy and big girl pants. It's time to believe. It's time. Joining me today to discuss a game that will be seismic one way or another to our season, I have Asan. Hello, sir. How are you?
Morning, Steve. I am even more excited after that intro. I've got to be honest with you. There's some real Braveheart stuff going on there, and I definitely like it.
It does feel like it's time, though, isn't it? Not just for... Because we always discuss the team and how they, when it gets to the business end of the season, they're focused, they're kind of, you know, this is where the whole rest of the season is building up to. It goes the same for us too. Now is time to start, you know, we've been quibbling all year about the form of individuals, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's just time to back the boys, do you think?
Hugely so. I think obviously there will be an element of what happened at the weekend in the Premier League in terms of the way that we feel about this part of the season. I think that suddenly we've gone from where 2 weeks ago, I think there was a sense of, well, you know, the fact that we've come this far this season, having done the treble last season, is already its own reward and its own victory. And whereas now we can smell trophies. Mm. Big trophies again. And it's come at just that moment where you also feel as though this is when this team generally come good. This is when you see the best of Guardiola's City. And so you can't help but look at Wednesday night and go, oof, that could be the start of something very, very, very special.
Well, yeah, and moreover, the fact that our injuries have cleared up as well, because that, of course, has been one of the big defining narratives of our season with Kev, etc., out for such a long time. But you look at Walker being back and Ake being back, or at least in contention now, and it leaves John Stones as our only injured player at this juncture. Of course, that can change. In one moment, that can change. But where we're sitting now, we're looking at a handful of league games. We're looking at a semi-final of Champions League. We're looking at a semi-final of an FA Cup. And we're in good shape for once, aren't we, in terms of kind of personnel and available players?
Usually so. I would say, though, that last season we were quite lucky in the run-in that we had more or less a fully fit squad. I think that you have to continually give credit to the medical team and the physios at City. If you look at particularly Liverpool and Man United, the kind of the awful run of injuries that they've had from the start of the season to now, and how many of them are the kind of muscle injuries that you do feel should be avoidable with the right kind of conditioning and the right sort of advice given to the players. And then to kind of, you know, I said this on the review that we did yesterday of the Luton game, talking about Liverpool, that, you know, they've had a lot of recurring injuries. So they've had a lot of players that got injured, came back and got injured again in their first game back. That's bad. That speaks to either bad advice from the medical team or management and coaching staff not listening to the medical team. So yeah, I think that we're lucky in the kind of setup from a physio and a conditioning point of view at City.
100%. I should say, I said we were in the semi-final of the Champions League. I got a little bit ahead of myself.
I know, I didn't want to correct you.
But I also mentioned the fact that Kyle's back and Ake is back. Again, just in contention, I can't see you for starting, to be honest, in such a big game when they're, you know, not match fit, as it were, not back up to full speed. Could you see either player starting?
I mean, I guess the Walker question's a really interesting one, because personally, I feel as though Akanji's probably been our most consistent defender this season. I also feel as though he was great last week. And I also feel as though in general, since Walker's gotten injured, the performances of the team as a whole have improved. Now, I'm not saying that the performances of the team have improved because Walker's injured. There is part of you that thinks maybe there is some correlation there in terms of stylistically how we have to change when Walker isn't in the team and how we build up, and maybe we're a little bit stronger in the build up. What do you think?
I completely agree. I think it's the type of player Kyle is, which of course is a huge plus when you're looking at his pace when we're without the ball. But when we're with the ball, the fact that, you know, he is not one of those players who tucks in and inverts into midfield. Akanji is, and Akanji's kind of ball playing attributes are far more superior, I would say, to Kyle. And of course, with John Stones coming back, that was a big plus as well. That's a big factor for me. But yeah, absolutely. I think the style of football that we play is far more enhanced without a player who, when we don't have a ball, we really, really wish was in the team. Because, you know, what the insurance that Kyle offers, it cannot be, and particularly coming up against Vinicius and particularly coming up against Real Madrid, you know, invaluable. But when in possession, which is, let's be honest, with Manchester City most of the time, I think, yeah, we are better without him, which is not something I would have said in previous seasons, but it has become apparent in recent weeks.
Would you do it, though? Would you?
Yeah, I wouldn't bring him back. Would you bring him back?
Like, I mean,
it's a big game to just throw someone straight back in.
You know why I'd be tempted to bring him back? Because I feel as though after what happened last season over the two legs, that Walker is a little bit in Vinicius Jr.'s head.
Yes.
And I think that that's a good thing. I think that, you know, my feeling is that if you're doing the Real Madrid version of this podcast, you sat there going, oh, we don't want Kyle Walker back. We definitely don't want Kyle Walker back because we want that outlet and that pace from Vinicius to be almost unplayable, bearing in mind the space that City always leave him behind at the Etihad.
But we just mentioned there about Liverpool and their propensity to rush players back and throw them back into games and then suffer recurring injuries. Mm. I mean, that's always a risk for Ake and Walker, should they feature on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, I think so I think there's a distinction between Walker and Stones, for example. I think Stones is somebody who... So firstly, what Guardiola said after the weekend game is not so much that he's injured. He said he's fine. He's just got some niggle, right? Mm. So that suggests to me that they've just wrapped him in cotton wool, knowing that they've got Madrid again on Wednesday. But the difference between Walker and Stones for me is that Walker is such a natural specimen and so rarely gets injured and is so fit that... if the physios go, he's fine, and he goes, I'm fine, I'd kind of be tempted to do it. And also, and I don't mean this in a kind of facetious way, but we've just discussed, we can kind of handle Walker being injured. So let's say we throw him in and he does ping somewhere after an hour. You're all right, because you've got a Akanji you can throw on there. And even if you miss Walker for 10 days or 2 weeks, you can kind of live with that. But at the same time, the psychological impact of having him in the team sheet from a Madrid point of view feels important?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the big moments of last season was Vinicius and Ancelotti on the touchline basically shrugging their shoulders. You know, the players just said, I don't know what to do. I don't know what we can do. And there's no question that not only Walker, but City are in those players' heads. And, you know, you look back at the performance that we gave at the Etihad last season, that's got to be a psychological factor as well. But if me and you kind of semi-disagree, I would say, on Walker, because, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't be disappointed if he started. It's Kyle Walker, for goodness sake. But if you semi-disagree, what ultimately matters, of course, is what Pep does. What do you think Pep will do with our defence on Wednesday night? There's a couple of certs in there, for sure, isn't there? Diaz, Kvaradiol. I mean, I can't see Ake starting.
So, I wonder whether, and this is a mad one, right? So don't shoot me, but I wonder whether he goes Akanji, Stones, Guardiola and Walker. I'm thinking of, for example, obviously Diaz doesn't play at Anfield, right? And it's a tactical decision based upon what Liverpool's strengths are. And I wonder whether he looks at Madrid's strengths on the counter-attack, on the break, and goes with the idea that, well, Akanji's almost twice as fast as Ruben Diaz, and maybe having Walker and Akanji on that kind of right-hand side or nominal right-hand side nullifies Vinicius much more than if you have Diaz next to Walker. And also, and again, I'll throw this over to you, my worry would be that Kyle Walker and Ruben Diaz together this season have not covered themselves in glory. When the two of them have played together, particularly in the first half of the season, they continually felt like the weak link. And part of the issue with that, for me, is that neither of them are particularly comfortable on the ball.
Yeah. No, I completely 100% agree with that. But Diaz is a leader, and this is a big, big game. And to drop him for such a game, I don't know. I do get your logic. But then if you're going to start with Walker and Stones, that's two, well, not semi-fit, but certainly two players in there who something could ping, something could go at any given moment. You know, Stones has got niggles. I said from the, you know, I described him at the top as being injured and out of contention. I didn't know he was that close to contention, to be honest. So that's a plus for me. But still, there are niggles there. And Walker's to be thrown back in after a couple of months out. It's such a big game. I mean, to risk one, sure, but to risk two in a back four is too much for me. But the question was what you think Pep might do. And Pep does like to take risks and chances, doesn't he?
This is it.
In the biggest games.
I think there's an element of, I think one of the things that I've really come to terms with is the idea that Pep is so singularly focused on a game as a tactical battle between two sets of 11 players that oftentimes we look at wider context and go, oh, why are you tinkering? Like, you know, do the obvious because we play really well when we do the obvious. Whereas I think for Pep, he may well look at Real Madrid this season as a bigger threat than last season. He may well look at the game tomorrow night and think, well, as much as I'd like to think it goes like it did last year, what if it doesn't go like it did last year? What if Madrid are more threatening on the break? What if they do find it a little bit easier to get on the ball? And I think that when you begin to take all of that stuff into account, I think that that kind of back four permutation becomes really important. And I think that I almost feel as though if you're going to play Diaz, then you play Akanji. Do you know what I mean? Because you know Akanji's super comfortable, kind of defending side on, ball at his feet. He can step into the middle if he needs to. He's fine in tight spaces. He's great in aerial duels. He's fast enough. And so it kind of mitigates. If you think Diaz has got a lack of pace and probably isn't as good on the ball, then it mitigates that. So if I look at it from Pep's point of view, you either play Akanji right back, Diaz centre back, Stones left centre back, and Gvardiol, or you play Walker, Akanji, Stones, and Gvardiol. Yeah, so that would be my two back fours.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely go along with that. And I think it may well be the former, I think, which would be the same back four we played in the Bernabeu. I think Akanji obviously has to start. If Stones can start, then please start him, you know, because the attribute he offers is. Well, there's no other player who can do what he can do, frankly, within the City setup. So, yeah, he must start if he can start. And that's a huge bonus for me. I had no idea that. I'd actually ruled him out. So that's a huge bonus.
It is.
Moving into the midfield area, one player I really want to talk about today is Mateo Kovacic. I was a huge fan of his at Chelsea. He started really brightly at City. Kind of sustained a bit of bad form. Well, it's to an exaggeration to say poor form, but he just went off it a little bit, down one level. But he's back, I would say, and he's really starting to show all the things that we so admired him for at Chelsea. Would you go along with that?
I've always liked him. I was probably a little bit more... I was a bit more positive when we signed him than a few people. I genuinely felt as though we'd very cleverly gone and got a Gundo replacement. Now, obviously, he's got very different attributes to Gundo, and the main thing is just that he's not really a final third player. So he's fine in the build-up. He's really press resistant. He's very neat and tidy. But final third, he generally offers very little. Now, obviously, he scores a banger on Saturday. But how that shapes up for the game tomorrow night, I don't know is the honest answer, because I think that if you look at it as, well, the game's 0-0, which it sort of is, and you look at it as a one-off cup final, then how do you approach a game like that if you're City? Do you go, because obviously like last week, yeah, Pep goes Kovacic, Rodri, Grealish, Foden and Bernardo Silva, but that's because KDB isn't available.
Yeah.
So if KDB is available, I'm not taking Phil out of the team. I'm not taking Bernardo out of the team. Not sure I'm taking Jack out of the team either. So then it kind of only leaves Kovacic that you potentially could take out of the team. But then that's a very attacking team that you suddenly land on. It's a good problem to have, but I don't know. I've kind of talked around the houses. I wouldn't want to have to make that decision tomorrow night about whether Kovacic starts because I wouldn't know who would take out the team.
I mean, the beauty of Kovacic is the same beauty as what we had in Gundo, particularly prior to last season where he became a real integral part of the team. But you could bring him on, you know what I mean? You could bring him on and steady the ship. And if you're 1-0 up and you just want to see the game out, or, you know, he's priceless in that regard. I think we're going to start on the front four. I think we're going to try and replicate what we did to them last season. Whether we do or not, you know, remains to be seen. And let's face it, that was just an unparalleled performance. But I think I think Kovacic will be captain reserve for, you know, an hour in. Let's say it's kind of with 2-1 up. What a great player to bring on and just steady things.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And I think that, you know, when you're looking at a game like tomorrow night, it's probably going to be a 95, 97 minute game minimum, I would say. I think you've got to look at having a bench. And when you look at the way Doku performed at the weekend, the way he's kind of slowly found his form again, you look at how Kovacic performed at the weekend, there's two moves that you want to have from the bench. Do you know what I mean? You've got an attacking move and a defensive move from the bench, depending on the game state. I think also, if you're going to start KDB, I don't know if you can eat 90 out of him. Now, he only did 75 at the weekend, yeah? So that's good already. But we've got Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final on Saturday, and I don't want to throw that away. I think, and I'm a very competitive person by nature, and you look at Guardiola, and you know that he is as well, and you know that as much as he's only picking a team for Real Madrid, the kind of bench and how you, the moves that you potentially can make, I think that you've got to have one eye on Chelsea for those. And I like the idea of Kova being available. Like, you know, let's say if we, in some fantasy world, we can do what we did last year and be 2-3-0 up with an hour gone. I think the Kova for KDB move at that point, I think it would make quite some sense. So that's a little bit where I land, but it's not they're good problems that Pep has got. And we have them right across the lines as we continue to talk about the rest of the team. I think Pep has these problems right across the lines, but they're good problems to have. But it's not a decision I would want to make, if that makes sense. Because I just find it hard to... I feel as though my nature is to go front foot. So I'd be like, no, take Kovar out, put KDB in, that's a badass team. But then, do we have enough control there? Is Bernardo, KDB, Rodri, if they're tight, close together, is that enough? Is there enough athleticism there?
I believe so with Bernardo. I mean, obviously we're all huge fans of Bernardo, but I think one aspect which is somewhat undervalued is defensive qualities. And he's got previous as me for really turning up against Real Madrid. So Bernardo in there with Rodri, I'm assured in that regard. I think there's enough cover there. And we can't contain them.
How do you think he did last week, though? I thought Bernardo was, I'm just going to say really quickly, it wasn't Bernardo's best game at the Bernabeu. He gave the ball away far too much for my liking.
Stationed out wide though, wasn't he, on the right? Kind of drifting in to play number 10 and then going out wide again. I don't like to see him out wide. I don't like to see him on the right. He's kind of more of a utility player in that regard. And it's kind of wasted out there. I always like to see him central. But I completely agree. It wasn't his best performance by any stretch. And it was very unlike him to be giving the ball away as often as he did. But like I say, he's got previous from, you know, past seasons of really turning up against Real. And Yeah, I mean, him and Rodri in the middle, I'm more than happy there. And then ahead of them, I mean, the Arsenal that we've got, KDB, Foden, Grealish, Haaland, that's more than enough to see off Real Madrid. I mean, as for Jack, obviously we're both in agreement he should start for the control he offers, etc. But also, I mean, he started the last three games against Real Madrid in the last two seasons. So obviously, Pep, that's who he wants in that role. So I think one of the absolute certs for this Wednesday would be Jack Grealish starting. And then, of course, Foden's an obvious one. Haaland's an obvious one. It just comes down to Kovacic, really, KDB and Bernardo, and who misses out and where do they play? But I'm in agreement with you.
Let me throw something at you, right? Again, if you look at Foden's performance in the Bernabeu and you look at the goal that he scores playing centrally, how do you make the argument to move him to the right wing to play Bernardo centrally?
Well, I mean, Bernardo, I think, will be sitting in a lot more. I think he'll be, you know, basically just making sure that Rodri is not isolated, because we've seen this in the past, and, you know, Rodri obviously can take that and can do that role. Not ideal in a game such as this with the attacking prowess that Real Madrid have. We can't just have one kind of holding midfielder there isolated with, you know, his teammates 15 yards away from him. So I think his job, Bernardo, particularly in that first half, particularly in that first 20 minutes, will be to sit in and just make sure nothing gets through. In which case then, Foden is unleashed to do, you know, more attacking alongside Kev De Bruyne and Grealish. So that's how I think we'll set up, and that's how I think we'll start, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it. I can definitely see it. But I'm not, like, so the way I view it, right, is I'm caught between two stools. It's a difficult decision to make. I think that if you play De Bruyne, Rodri and Bernardo have played kind of as a two before, right? So in a way, you feel as though, okay, if you put aside how often Bernardo gave the ball away at the Bernabeu, and actually how poor he was at times on the ball, and you pretend that you're getting the best version of Bernardo, then I can kind of see the argument for playing him next to Rodri. But a little bit my issue with that is just, if you play a Kanji, you're not going to have width on the right. Are you going to stick Foden out there and ask him to hug the touchline? I don't think you're going to get the best out of Phil there. You want Phil to be narrower, but if Phil's going to be narrower, then you're going to need a Kanji or Walker to push a little bit. You're going to need somebody to go out there and overlap, and also have an eye on what's going on behind them in terms of what Vinicius is doing and what Bellingham is doing if he's pulling into those pockets.
I mean, you're not going to like this, Asad, but I think Foden's going to be out wide, and I think he'll be stationed out there, and it'll be a duel between him and Mendy. And okay, I completely agree that you don't get the best out of him in that role, but I think in this instance, that's a sacrifice he's going to have to make for the lineup that Pep will ultimately go with, I think.
Yeah, and I'm all right with it, you know. I'm not going to be mortally offended, right, if he decides that Foden's going to be right wing, Jack's going to be left wing, and Kev's going to go through the middle, and Bernardo and Rodri are going to sit and hold. Can you see a world in which either Kev or Foden don't start and he goes with Kovacic again?
No, not if they're both available, if they're both fit enough, then absolutely both are going to start. The two of them this season, it's kind of, they're just taking it in turns, aren't they, to demolish teams single-handedly at times. And it's such a blessing to have that. There's not a chance. I think the form that Foden showed in the last 6 months and what De Bruyne can do in the big games and what he's done so many times in the big games, the big Champions League games, there's not a chance. But I think both are definite starters. Could you see a world where one's dropped?
I mean, it's Pep, so in a world I can see, in a way I can see any world. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be staggered if we found Doku on one of the wings, for example. I wouldn't be staggered if Kovacic started. I think Alvarez won't get in the team. And, like, you know, the ones that I'd kind of put a line through and go, well, those lads definitely won't start. I think Alvarez, Nunes and Oscar Bob, that you get a line through those three names. But almost everybody else in the squad, I could sort of make an argument that they might end up starting for various different reasons. So in that sense, I probably won't be shocked if he were to go with Kovacic. I do think the challenge for him then will be, who am I benching? Because I don't think KDB gets benched, and I don't think Foden gets benched. So I do think the only way to make that work is to play Foden on the left and put Jack on the bench.
Right.
Because I think that Bernardo's a little bit teacher's pet when it comes to Guardiola. He's never really dropped him or rested him, and certainly he's a mainstay in every single big game. And to be honest, in many respects, Bernie's a real big game player.
Yeah.
And so you almost feel as though sometimes in the smaller games, it's harder to see him getting up for it and making a big impact. Whereas in the big games, the high profile games, he tends to love it. So I think Jack dropping is the only way that I can see Kova slotting in there. I think I'll throw this over to you, right? So do you think it suits City or Madrid for it to be 0-0 on the hour?
Oof, I think it suits Madrid far more. They've got that pedigree, particularly in recent years. Remember, was it 2 years ago when they scored so many late goals in the Champions League? They know that they can do that, which we can, of course, but for them, it's ingrained as well. I wouldn't like it to be 0-0 after an hour, and I think neither would the Etihad. I think there'd be a certain vibe going around, wouldn't there? And that could very easily translate to the players. So, obviously I don't mean this, and this is a stupid thing to say, but it's almost preferable to be 1-0 down than 0-0, because the crowd would be up for it, we'd be attacking, we'd be kind of going at them. 0-0 is so precarious, so in the balance. Do you attack, do you defend? You know, you go into basically that stage of the game where one goal is going to decide it. The nerves would be absolutely kind of intense. Please let
me know. But you know what? Don't you think that that's where last season's performance does come into it? That actually you have a blueprint for how, forget about the opposition for a moment, you have a blueprint for what you need to do. So if you play like that, what the team talk that Guardiola can give is, if you play like you did a year ago, you'll be in the semi-final of the Champions League. No doubt.
Yes.
Yeah. And so the players almost don't need to worry about the opposition in that sense. They need to simply worry about their own performance. I want to say, though, I was at the Etihad for that game. If our atmosphere is half of what it was a year ago, Madrid are dead. Madrid are dead. That is the most feral atmosphere I've ever come across at the Etihad. Every Madrid touch got booed. It was incredible. It was just one of those nights where a ground unites in their dislike for the opposition and in their love for their team. And I think that part of why we were so good was simply the level that the atmosphere was at. It gave the players that, it's a cliche, but it can give you that extra 10% on on the night of a big game.
Well, I mean, Bernardo Silva epitomises that, doesn't he? You said earlier about how he kind of raises his game for the big games. So often, he gets his game raised by the crowd. He feeds off atmosphere more than many other players, I think. It's interesting you bring up the kind of atmosphere of last year, and hopefully we can expect the same on Wednesday night. When we revisit that game, what kind of traits or factors from it will carry over onto Wednesday night? So we've mentioned the atmosphere, but in terms of, we were just out. We flew out the gates that night. I mean, from minute one, you were kind of, if it wasn't Real Madrid and if it wasn't such a game of such importance, I'd be kind of sitting back thinking, we are going to batter whoever we're playing today 5-0. You could tell it was just, you know, you said that the atmosphere was feral, that the team performance was feral, I think. Will it be anything like that, or will it be far more kind of reserved, conservative, kind of, you know, cautious?
No, because I think if you're, again, if you're in that dressing room, you all did what you did to Madrid a year ago.
Yeah.
So you all know that you can do it again. I think the key characteristic in particular of that first half was Madrid's inability to get on the ball. I don't think they got into City's half until the 30th minute of the game or the 25th minute of the game, which is just a madness. Like, it's not, that sounds like a made up stat, because that's Real Madrid. I mean, in many respects, if you said Brentford didn't get into City's half for 30 minutes, you wouldn't believe it. Never mind Real Madrid, because you'd go, well, you know, there's surely got to be one that got booted up there that they managed to get on the end of. So it's quite an insane start to think about it like that. So I think that's the key. I think the key is going to be, I think there's a, what we did so perfectly in the game a year ago is, one, we controlled the ball to such an extent that Madrid, they visibly got more and more frustrated. And two, we scored the goal. And yeah. I think that that 1-2 combination is going to be really, really key. And the mad thing about the Madrid game, if you go and watch it back again, the point at which Bernardo scores, they've had three off the line already. Do you know what I mean? Courtois made one incredible world-class save. I think we've hit a bar or a post, and we've had one off the line. So we should already be 3-0 at the point that we go 1-0 up. And so I feel as though if I were to go, like, what's my pessimistic hat? What's my worry? My only concern is domination, but not getting the ball in the net, and it goes into halftime. Because I think that that's what Madrid will be looking at. Goes back to that question I asked you, of who does it suit on the hour mark for it to be 0-0? For me, it definitely suits Madrid, because I suspect that Carlo will be going, you have to win every duel in that first half. Look at how they bullied you a year ago. You can't let that happen. You have to be much more aggressive. You have to be much more confident on the ball. And I think that for us, what we have to do is identify the moments that they try to be confident on the ball and not let them. Press them like animals. Make sure that everybody's got a mate next to them so that you're not pressing alone. Make sure that when it comes to winning the ball back, that you're careful with it, but then you're also aggressive with your passing. I'm looking, obviously, I think KDB's back. I'm looking at KDB, the KDB-Haaland connection in particular, thinking about that pass early on in the Luton game where KDB's through, which the first goal comes from. Those moments kill the confidence of a defensive line. If we can put that fear of God into Madrid's defenders in the first 10 or 15 minutes, if we can have a moment, doesn't matter if we score from it or not, we can have that moment where Haaland is through, or Kevin Sabar, or Phil finds himself through, those moments will be what push Madrid back and see them shrink back into their shell. So that's what I'm looking for in the really, really early stages.
Just, I didn't include this in the agenda, but it's just occurred to me now, when they do go into their shell, Real Madrid, as every team does, they're not particularly special, are they? In terms of, you know, okay, they could play the ball out, they could play neat kind of triangles and get, you know, get out of danger. But they're just, I mean, when they've got the ball, when they're coming at you, sensationally good, or you know, they have a potential to be sensationally good. But if you do put them on the back foot, you can make them look ordinary.
Absolutely. And I think actually, I think that they're obviously not an ordinary team because they have very good players.
Yeah.
But I think that where I think where they're weak is they're not a possession-based team in the way that City are. And so they're very happy going into a game like the City game, conceding the idea that we'll probably only have 40% of the ball max in comparison to City 60. I think that's a problem, because I think that what a team like City can do is they can, like, it's normal for a team like Brentford to not have loads of the ball, right? It's normal for counter-attacking teams to go, it's cool, we don't need the football. But Real Madrid dominate the ball in most of the league games that they play. Those players are used to being the proactive team. I think back to last week, and 10 minutes into the game, Jude Bellingham throwing his arms about, right? Because he's gone to press and he's been passed around. That's what I'm talking about. That in those moments, those players, they feel entitled to have more of the football than they're having. That creates frustration.
If that's a potential negative for Real Madrid, let's just kind of look at their strengths for a moment. Who do you fear most from them? Is it Vinicius, Rodrigo, or Bellingham?
Those two. I think those two. Yeah. I think Vinicius and Rodrigo I fear a lot. I think it's easier to control Bellingham than people realise. I think we did a very good job of controlling him at the Bernabeu last week. I think we should be bullying him tomorrow night. I want to see Bernardo, like Diaz. I want every opportunity. I want people going through him, really go through him, put him in the stands. Because you do that two or three times, his arse will go. His attitude stinks.
Yeah.
I'm sure of it. He's got a little bit of the Cristiano Ronaldo about him that if you rattle him, he's not that guy. You know, there's some guys, you rattle Messi and he's like, oh, really? I'll score 6 goals in 4 minutes. Bye. I don't think Bellingham's that guy. I think you rattle him and his performance will just get more and more selfish and less productive. So I'd be looking at rattling Bellingham and then I'd be looking at, I mean, look, I think Camavinga was probably their best player last week. So obviously they've got Vinicius and Rodrigo, but what I want to see happen better is getting in and around Camavinga, not letting him run away from our midfielders, not letting him control Madrid's possession. So that's those three, Camavinga, Rodrigo and Vinicius are the three that I'd be looking to control. I think if you make it a Bellingham versus our centre-halves game, our centre-halves will win. And I think there is a possibility to do that if you find a way to control. It's almost like that's where I find myself landing on the Kyle Walker thing and going, you know what, fuck it, I'll play him. You know why? Because they nullify each other. You just make that its own little one-on-one battle, and then it's 10-on-10, and it's cool because you've nullified their best player.
Yeah. There was a game recently where I thought exactly the same thing, and I can't recall the example, but that is such a plus because then, you know, the other 10, great. You know, we're at home. We've got Kevin De Bruyne, we've got Erling Haaland. I back us every time. When you look at, like, the opponent's kind of main threat, if you can nullify it and you are Manchester City, then you've got every chance in the world to win and win comfortably. Not that we will on Wednesday. I do believe we'll win, just not comfortably.
You know what? I'm going to say something, right? And it's probably the most pragmatic that I've been recently. If you were to ask me, how confident are you? I wouldn't go beyond it's a 50-50 game. Even though we're at home, I wouldn't go beyond it's a 50-50 game. Because I think one of the things that this season should tell us is that why we love football is because how unpredictable it is. You look at what happened at the end at the Bernabeu 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and you look at how a game that we were so in control of just slipped away in the blink of an eye, yeah? And so I think that the latter stages of the Champions League, it lends itself to madness is happening. It lends itself to chaos. And I think we're not very good when chaos ensues. And so, and Real Madrid can, they're, you know what they'll be saying to each other in that dressing room? They'll be going, we're fucking Real Madrid, lads. Doesn't matter. We're Real Madrid. We do this. Even if we're losing 2-0 with 5 minutes to go, don't let your heads drop because we've seen what we can do at these being 2 goals down with 10 minutes to go. And so that feeling, it leaves me with the feeling of I'm not prepared to say, oh, massively confident. I think we should slap Real Madrid. I genuinely think it's a 50-50 game. If I'm sat on the review on Thursday lunchtime and City have gone out of the Champions League, that's not something that if you say that to me now, I go, nah, that's never happening. I think there is a world in which that does happen. And so, and it's a nice way to segue back into what do we need to do? What do we need to see? Control, calm, a level of a level of maturity, and then the killer instinct, the Bernardo Silva goal, yeah? The Erling Haaland goal. I don't care if it comes off somebody's ass, the goal that puts us 1-0 up, having controlled the football, that sends Madrid a little bit into their shell.
Yeah, we have the propensity to rattle them. We've done it in the past and we can do it again. And if you do rattle Real Madrid, I do think they become far more ordinary than what their kind of calibre of players would suggest. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one. I would suggest, though, I mean, yes, calm, control, it's our way, it's what we do best. I would suggest, though, last season wasn't calm. It was controlled. But that was the thing. It was a maelstrom of attacking football that we also managed to combine with control, which when you put those two things together, you have an unstoppable force. I mean, that was just a level of football. I've never seen that level of football before, honest to God. I just haven't. You know, I've seen it from individuals and I've seen it in halves of games. I've never seen it across the 90. We were just... there's no way we could replicate that, but if we can get close to that on Wednesday, then
I'm backing us. You know what I'd say? I would say that if we can play at that level again and we manage to get past Real Madrid, I think the kind of aura of Champions League Manchester City becomes something else.
Yeah.
I think that navigating the tie tomorrow night, if you come out of it with a win of more than a goal and you've dominated possession, I think the aura of Manchester City is pretty scary at that point. I think if you're Bayern Munich, you're Arsenal, or whoever goes through on the other side, you're sort of going, ugh, I don't want to deal with this. That's the level that we're approaching now. And I think that it's a little bit a testament to how close we are already to being that team that we drew 3-3 with Madrid at the Bernabeu. The fella here who runs the local cafe is from Madrid. He's a massive Real Madrid fan. I asked him yesterday, how confident you're feeling about Wednesday? He looked at me with a dead straight face and he said, we're bringing back 4 or 5 Manchester City goals to Madrid. We're going to get slapped on Wednesday night. And that tells me there's already a fear and an aura around City. If you look at the comments that were made by the Madrid players after the game last week, they're all saying it felt like a defeat.
Mm. Well, absolutely. That was their chance. That was their moment. Because what it now depends on them to do is, get a victory at the Etihad, which, you know, after what happened last season, after how good City are at home, I mean, I don't have it to hand, but our record at home the last year has been crazy. So it definitely puts us on the front foot. It definitely makes us favourites. Before I come to a score prediction, if you could choose one City player to put in a 9 out of 10 performance on Wednesday, who would it be?
De Bruyne. If Kev drops a 9 out of 10, he'll score a hat trick himself and the game's over. Do you know what I mean? His level in those big games, in those big moments, is his 9 out of 10. Don't get me wrong, everybody knows how much I love Phil Foden. His 9 out of 10 eclipses Phil's 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
So for me,
it raises the level of the other players around.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And so, definitely. I want to see a KDB 9 out of 10 performance.
Score prediction? Could be anything, couldn't it?
It could be anything. It's a moot thing to do a score prediction. But I'm going to go with City take a 2-0 lead. Madrid get a goal back in the second half, but we see it out at 2-1.
Ooh, that'll be tense. I'm going to go 3-1 City. Similar, actually. I think we'll go 2 goals up. We'll pull one back, but then we'll score a third. So 3-1 City for me. You mentioned Arsenal and Bayern there in the other semi. Should we progress past Real, of course, who would you rather face out of those two?
It's funny, if you'd have asked me a week ago, I'd have said Bayern Munich, definitely.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether Arsenal are a bit more creaky than we realise. For example, obviously I'm really annoyed about the way we performed against Arsenal at home a few weeks ago. I wonder whether Guardiola had one eye on potentially facing them in the Champions League and went, you know what, I'm not revealing my hand yet. I'll take the point and I'll bank on them to drop some points and we'll move from there. And then I don't need to reveal my hand until the Champions League if they get past Bayern. No, I still say Bayern. What about you?
I think Arsenal. I can't quite put my finger on why, but I actually think we could really slap them in the Champions League, you know. Whereas I know we did the same to Bayern last season, but that was a one-off. You do not do that to Bayern Munich, no matter how poor form they're in or how poor a season they're having. In the Champions League, you don't easily slap Bayern Munich at any stage. Whereas I think we could with Arsenal. I think we could put 2 or 3 past them in the first leg, game over. So, I would be very confident going up against Arsenal in the Champions League, far more than I would if we were playing them in the Premier League. And I'm not articulate enough to explain why, but that's just my gut instinct on that one. Okay, before we go today, I just want a quick discussion on Cole Palmer. We know, you know, we've all got the regrets now about selling him on, and we all wish that had not happened. We can be reasonable about it and say, well, you know, would he have been this player at City? Very doubtful this season, at least. He'd probably be back up to Kevin De Bruyne. But what it did bring up is a question that I'd be really intrigued to get your answer to, Sam, which is, given how sensational Cole Palmer's been this season, 20 goals, 9 assists, will it change your thinking at City about how they go about selling the kids off for profit? Will it put more pause for thought? Maybe they might kind of change for structure of a deal, so, you know, to insist upon sell-ons. Will it change the thinking at City, do you think?
No, I think I think that where they will probably, and it's not even that they will fit. So the City's point of view is one of the reasons that we were comfortable letting Cole Palmer go is because we feel Oscar Bob's just as good. I've seen enough of Oscar Bob to go, he probably is just as good as Cole Palmer. So I'm all right with that as a point of view. I think that what they should learn from the Cole Palmer thing is that you have to make sure that you have pathways for players. So they can't do to Bob what they did to Palmer. Yeah. And actually, they're not doing that because you see Oscar Bob being started in more games than Palmer was started in. And I think that does come down to being a bit more cognizant of the idea that, look, the most talented lads, they're going to have so many options that you can't leave it to the lap of the gods. You've got to, for the sake of the motivation inside the academy, for the sake of the loyalty that you want to breed in players through the academy, you've got to have a pathway. But you can't make it easy. Like, you can't do it the other way around, where anybody with half a bit of talent suddenly, like, you can't do it the United way. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not gonna fly. I think where it might slightly change their view is simply on being clearer with the pathways with the players who have the talent.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, well, that pretty much kind of sums up what we wanted to cover today. And now, in case, it's crossing our fingers and awaiting the kickoff, which is some time away yet. But in the meantime, thank you very much, Jason.
Cheers, Steve. One more thing very quickly. Mm. A little 93-20 exclusive. Kyle Walker was dropping his kids off at school this morning. And he jogged to the school gate in flip-flops. So I suspect the hammies are fine.
Who jogs in flip-flops? I don't jog in flip-flops.
In it. Do you know what I mean? Classic Kyle, that.
Yeah.
He's playing Real Madrid tomorrow night. And this morning he's, you know, jogging to the school gate in flip-flops to drop his kids off.
Blimey. Well, thank you very much for that. And thank you, everyone, for listening in. That's a wrap for today, folks. Check out the 93-20 platform this week for a Real Review, the Premier League show, and the Friday show. The pods are coming thick and fast as the game's coming thick and fast, and history is on our doorstep. In the meantime, take care, everyone. And ASAM?
Forever up the Blues.